agency are working to destabilize our country. Why now? Suppression of dissidents may have been the catalyst, Crimea, the alliance with Iran, or 10 other factors, but the threat is real, and we will have a crisis unless we act. Putin poured himself more tea.
You've had a day to think on it. What do you propose?
I have considered multiple options. Only one recommends itself.
Tell me.
A gust of wind-driven snow made the plate glass window flex in its frame. Shaitan knocking to be let in. That we eliminate the director of CIA, said Gorelikov softly. A log collapsed in the fireplace, spewing sparks into the room where several embers glowed on the pine floor. Shaitan was in the dacha now. Putin stared at Gorelikov, who continued almost in a whisper. His death, it must appear accidental, will derail this covert action against the Rodina. His agency will be demoralized and in shock, its case officers vulnerable and disillusioned. The U.S. administration will hitch up their skirts in panic, and Congress will blubber until it is time for them to go into their next recess. Putin had not blinked once. The hand of Russia will, of course, remain invisible, even though the world will suspect, no, will marvel at the utter imperturbability of Vladimir Putin and Novorossiya, said Gorelikov, wondering if he was laying it on too thick, but deciding it could never be too thick for V.V. Putin.
How would you undertake such an action? Said Putin. The CIA director is protected at all times.
Gorelikov sipped his tea. I will examine the pieces to see how they might fit. None of our usual organic compounds. No forensic toxicology is acceptable. An indisputable accidental death will forestall open hostilities between our services.
Putin nodded. Put all your energies into the plan, he said curtly.
The president of the Russian Federation had just green-lighted the assassination of the director of the Central Intelligence Agency.
Do you need anything?
Gorelikov looked at the flames of the candles. What do you think of including Igorova in the planning? She knows the field, has a cool head, and will not shrink from extreme measures. Putin shook his head.
Only the two of us. No one else. I insist on that condition.
We will refer to the project henceforth as Cataclysm.
Understood, said Gorelikov.
The two men fell silent, and Anton knew the president, slayer of tigers, accomplished horseman, skilled jet pilot, and master of judo, appreciated the enormous risk of attempting to assassinate the American DCIA. With your approval, said Gorelikov, I would like to posit an additional refinement for your consideration. Any of our unicellular colleagues in FSB or the armed forces could have arrived at the solution of assassinating the head of CIA in 5 minutes. This, however, can only be the beginning of a larger plan that is infinitely more consequential and far-reaching. Putin dunked his black bread into the stew, waiting. Refinements. This is why he liked Gorelikov. Since Magnit's recruitment, I have been monitoring her career, said Gorelikov. As you know, she was recently promoted to Vice Admiral and is what one could call the U.S. Navy's senior flag rank science manager. She has access to technologies, research and development, and the Navy labs. Even though she is recognized for her brilliance, she is still generally considered meshtovakyi, awkward, pouchy, and three-cornered, without a political network outside her limited naval orbits. Accordingly, when she retires, the technical reporting asset Magnit disappears. For the last 2 years, I have steered her to balance her scientific career with duties that would burnish her political bona fides. She is ambitious and followed my instruction with her characteristic quantitative precision. She was recently assigned to a position on the Bureau of Navy Personnel Advisory Board, which wields considerable influence. This year she was also considered for adjutant to Admiral Richards, the Chief of Naval Operations, but was not selected. I suspect due to her lamentable lack of what the Americans call front office appeal. I fear Magnet will never have that quality. She could not acquire it any more than you or I could master her particle physics. But there has been more recent progress. She has been selected as a briefer to the Joint Chiefs because of her ability to explain science theory clearly and concisely to unschooled superiors. Part of these briefing duties includes accompanying the chairman to the White House every week. We are collecting some interesting national security intelligence now, which is the transition I wanted Magnet to make. You see, I have an endgame in mind. It's... Putin put up his hand for silence. The corners of his mouth lifted microscopically, which for him suggested barely suppressed mirth. What of her preference for Lomatka for women? He asked. Gorelikov was not fazed at the interruption. He expected the inevitable question from the president. Her addiction is aperiodic and controlled, he said. She indulges her appetites during discreet annual vacations abroad when under my supervision. She occasionally loses control with her partners, which I attribute to her social narcissism and pent-up sexual repression, a result of psychological conflict during childhood with an abusive father.
Loses control how? Asked the president.
Gorelikov shifted uncomfortably. Frenzied lovemaking, too rough use of sex aid, biting and slapping.
Have you filmed this behavior for later control? Asked Putin, who was once a spook himself.
Gorelikov shook his head. Coercion is not a motivating factor with Magnet. Apart from her initial and short-lived refusal to collaborate during her recruitment, she has grown into a model agent. Her narcissism fuels her spying. The only film ever taken of her was during the original Polovaya Zapadnya, the honey trap in the Metropole nearly 12 years ago.
Do you have the recording of that encounter? Said Putin.
Gorelikov shrugged. I have no idea where it is. I suppose somewhere in the archives.
My loyal counselor, you wouldn't be protecting your protege Igorova, would you? She was the sparrow in question.
Mr. President, you are referring to your next director of foreign intelligence, or have you changed your mind? I will admit I am a supporter of Colonel Igorova. I think she shows enormous promise. It was enough that he had twanged one of the unflappable Gorelikov's nerves. Putin had already seen all of Igorova's sparrow vintage films. She indeed showed enormous promise then as now. He was itching to get at her.
I agree, said Putin. Now tell me about your additional refinement.
The wind outside howled. It goes without saying that when a sitting DCIA passes away, the administration must select replacement candidates for consideration, one of whom will be put forward as the final nominee for congressional confirmation. Putin knew what was coming, but stayed silent so Gorelikov could finish spinning his web. I have instructed Magnet to dangle herself conspicuously in front of the president during briefings in the Oval Office, especially when she is the sole briefer on the occasions the chairman cannot come to the White House for the weekly brief. I have coached her to interject comments that would suggest she is politically aligned with the president, that she agrees with his defense and intelligence policies, and that she looks forward to working on his team either before or after her retirement.
You believe these blandishments will work? Said Putin.
Analysts in the Americas Department posit that the president is driven by ego and ideology, and that now in the 5th year of his presidency is increasingly thin-skinned to criticism, and as a result surrounds himself with sycophants. If Magnet can establish herself as a sympathetic ally, and the DCIA position is suddenly empty, I predict her name would be one the president at least would consider. The notion of naming a brainy liberal woman an admiral from the Navy to undo Alexander Larsen's bellicose legacy and unsettling covert action would appeal to him.
Too bad we don't have that other president, that Rasputnik, that satyr, still in the Oval Office, said Putin.
Magnet could have solicited the DCIA job on her knees, but this scheme appears extremely tenuous. The chance that Magnet would be tapped for the position is remote. Gorelikov counted on his fingers. We endeavor to influence outcomes often with no guarantees and hope for the desired results. The utter implausibility of making Magnet the DCIA is the hallmark of the perfect Zagovor, an exquisite conspiracy without Russian fingerprints. She has no high-profile civilian patrons, no covert sponsors, so there are no invisible strings. Magnet, the brilliant but unlovely stork, solidly partisan, able to manage the challenges of technology and the new cyber age, is the perfect candidate. If she is selected, you, Vladimir Vladimirovich, will own the CIA. More sparks flew from the fireplace as Shaitan flew around the massive pine rafters of the dacha, mightily pleased. Just beside the Situation Room, under the west wing of the White House, was a smaller briefing room with a short walnut table and three plush armchairs on each side, POTUS's chair at the far end under the presidential seal. Unlike the spacious mahogany-paneled sit-room, with seating for 20, including chairs for backbenchers, and multiple teleconferencing flat screens along the walls, the small briefing room featured only two compact screens on the far wall, above which were six digital clocks, one that displayed the time in Washington, a clock labeled President indicating the time wherever the president was located, one for Zulu time, and three additional time zone displays, today labeled Baghdad, London, and Kabul. Vice Admiral Audrey Rowland had just concluded a solo briefing to the president, his national security advisor, and the deputy NSC advisor on tests conducted by ONR on cavitation propulsion for littoral combat ships, an in-the-weeds subject usually not of interest to this commander-in-chief, whose idea of power projection was to enlist the tepid support of prevaricating allies and to sign treaties with hostile states that had no intention of honoring any diplomatic concordant. POTUS, however, was taken by the smaller, more lightly armed, and relatively inexpensive vessels as good examples of non-confrontational naval platforms. One could hear admirals' teeth grinding in the Pentagon all the way from the South Lawn. The briefing concluded. Admiral Rowland told the president that his notion of a more restrained U.S. military footprint, a more inclusive internationalist U.S. foreign policy that would abandon 19th-century practices of nation-building, regime change, and gunboat diplomacy, Audrey couldn't remember the other talking points Anton had drilled her on, were critical concepts in an unstable world. His feet characteristically propped up on the table, showing the soles of his shoes to the others, a grave insult to foreigners but merely boorish in the conference room, POTUS said he was glad to hear her views. Audrey hastened to add that from her perspective, restraint likewise applied to intelligence collection, whether DIA, Navy, Intel, or CIA. We just acquired a Russian anti-ship missile, I don't know the source, and we'll assess its capabilities and develop countermeasures, against which the Russians will develop counter-countermeasures, said Audrey. And the process will continue endlessly with enormous cost with so many other domestic priorities facing us. Anton had coached her to invoke inferences that would appeal to the president's well-known social progressivism. Mr. President, my retirement window is opening in a year. If I at any time can be of any assistance to you and your team, she nodded at the slack-jawed NSC advisor, then at the slug of a deputy, it would be my singular honor to continue to contribute. Audrey stopped there, not wanting to overdo it. POTUS thanked her, and he and the NSC advisor left the room, but the young deputy stayed behind and stared at Admiral Rowland as she packed up her briefing materials. "Don't you really know how the CIA got that missile?" he said. He was short, balding, with a round face that perpetually hovered somewhere between mean and deceitful. He had the dark eyes of a hanging judge. Audrey closed her Kevlar portfolio and secured the zipper pull under the lockable clamp. "No, and it really frosts me," she said with her carefully chosen prim vocabulary, which would, said Anton, bolster her vestal image. Anton constantly considered such details, thought Audrey. "I know I'm in the science end of things, but I could really add value to the requirements process." Young Caligula shook his head. "They never told you, a three-star admiral, about Copperfin. You've got to be fucking kidding me." In 3 minutes, he had told Magnet about the Copper Fin network and about some of the reporting in the compartment. Magnet knew she had to cauterize the leak. "Listen, don't tell me any more. It sounds pretty restricted. I've already forgotten it." The ferret's eyes narrowed, realizing he shouldn't have mentioned anything. But he knew the Admiral would be discreet. He'd keep his mouth shut, too. He shrugged, trying not to acknowledge his mistake, and changed the subject. "Sounds like you're looking for a job." "The Navy's been good to me, but I'm ready for a new challenge. I have the science thing down, and cyber's the next big hurdle. Intel would be a good fit." "Let me talk to the President," he said, puffing up, "the White House kingmaker. It's an interesting idea." Audrey smoothed her uniform coat and extended her hand. "I'm glad we talked. It's good to feel connected to someone downtown with real pull." The deputy nodded as if validating Newton's 3 laws of motion. "I'll be in touch." Lamb stew korma. Crush cloves, peppercorns, and cardamom seeds into a powder. Sauté chopped onions with spices until golden brown. Stir in cumin, cinnamon, turmeric, chopped coriander, and paprika. Add crushed garlic and grated ginger, and continue cooking until fragrant. Add peeled tomatoes with their juice, simmer, and add boneless lamb chunks and continue cooking. Add water and yogurt, and cover and simmer until lamb is tender. Serve with basmati rice. Chapter 5. Welcome to the Club. As Benford began his morning blaspheming about moles in Washington, there was an icy late-afternoon meeting in progress 7,800 kilometers away, around another conference table in the Kremlin. This room, right off the president's office in the Senate building, was immaculate, carpeted in blue and paneled in rich wood. The polished walnut table had dark mahogany inlays in a star pattern, a 5-pointed Soviet star, an antique kept in use for reasons of nostalgia. It was the president's conference room, after all, and he liked the discreet reminder of the past glories of the USSR. The meeting was called and directed by the goateed Anton Gorelikov, elegant in a blue suit from Brioni, a light blue spread-collar shirt from Turnbull and Asser, and a maroon 7-fold silk necktie from E. Marinella in Naples. His silver hair was combed straight back. Gorelikov's duty was to advise the president on foreign and domestic affairs, national security, and manipulating world events in favor of the Russian Federation, a modern-day Mikhail Suslov, who had been the chief ideologue of the Soviet Communist Party. He had graduated from the Faculty of Law at St. Petersburg State University in 1975 with Putin. Both with law degrees and both had joined the KGB, Putin in foreign intelligence, Gorelikov in analysis. When Vladimir ascended in politics during the boozy last days of Yeltsin, he tapped his friend from law school to join his political satrapy, and thanks to Anton's poise, acumen, and foresight, as well as a studied avoidance of all Kremlin intrigues, eventually attained chief of the secretariat. He had never married, was agnostic in matters of sex, trusted nobody, and was an astute and suspicious observer of human reactions. He had the president's confidence, as far as Vladimir Putin conferred his total trust on anybody, chiefly because he never sank to sycophancy. He occasionally reminded the president that surely there were moles in the Kremlin, just as Russia ran agents in Washington. Anton Gorelikov knew Putin's Russia was atrophying slowly from within, buoyed only by her poorly managed natural resources and the geopolitical misadventures that kept Putin on the world stage. But like a chess master brilliantly defending a losing game until an advantage revealed itself, Gorelikov reveled in the intrigue, in the manipulation of events, and in the wielding of power. His putative allies were Bornikov of the FSB, Patrushev of the Security Council, and he hoped Igorova, the rising star who had already been noticed by the Kremlin. Gorelikov was quietly maneuvering for her elevation to director of SVR. It would be a tall order for a woman to be appointed director of SVR, but the resourceful Gorelikov was known as a Volshevnik, a conjurer who could turn water to wine. There was no rush. Aside from acting as Vladimir's Machiavelli, Gorelikov was an aesthete. He collected paintings, bronzes, and antique maps, and was an immaculate clothes horse. He appraised the incomparable beauty of SVR Colonel Dominika Igorova, who was sitting on one side of the table, a thin file folder in front of her. Her blue eyes were extraordinary, her hands in repose were serene, and that face could launch a thousand ships, if the rotting Russian Red Fleet had that many left. Gorelikov knew Igorova's personal and service history, where she lived, how many times she had been posted or traveled abroad, quite a lot for her age and rank, and the more spectacular episodes of her career, including her service as a sparrow. One thing he did not know was that the beautiful Colonel Igorova was assessing the cerulean halo around his head, the luminous blue halo of the sophisticated thinker. It was time to begin. Gorelikov knew this meeting would be unpleasant. He disliked churlish behavior, which was in abundance among the oxen of Putin's inner circle of former KGB, gangster, and police colleagues, including the men opposite Igorova at the table. "Are we all present?" said Gorelikov, his voice smooth as a cello. "May I make introductions?" Across from Dominika sat Major Valery Shlikov of the GRU, the Military Foreign Intelligence Service of the General Staff of the Russian Federation. Dressed in a tailored suit with a blue necktie, Shlikov was in his 30s, a blonde, broad-faced Great Russian with lazy blue eyes and big lips. The yellow cloud that hung over him like a plague flag signaled conceit, envy, duplicity. Shlikov did not acknowledge or look at Dominika, but dismissively flipped the pages of a folder in front of him. "This one is ambitious and privileged," thought Dominika. "Why is he here?" The summons to this meeting was vague, but she assumed it was to discuss her North Korean recruitment, Academician Ri. Why would the GRU be present to discuss an SVR case? In Russia, competition among the services and inside the branches of the military and among the ministries was always feverish and sometimes desperately ruthless. When the KGB split into the SVR and the FSB, it just meant two more muzzles drinking from the same trough. And they all disdained the Krestyaniki, the peasants, in the GRU. To Shlikov's right sat a squat, chunky man in a too small suit with a patterned necktie knotted loosely around a drainpipe neck. He was older than Shlikov, in his late 50s, with immense scarred hands, like a retired wrestler. His hair was gray and thinning, and his gnarly face and crooked nose were creased and weathered. His broad forehead was a shiny mass of scar tissue as if from a terrible burn. Large brown eyes looked down unwavering at his hands. Gorelikov introduced him as Starshy Praporchik, Josip Blokhin, Master Sergeant Blokhin of Spetsgruppa V, or Vega Group, more commonly known as Vimpel, the Spetsnaz Special Forces Unit used by the GRU for assassinations and covert military operations. Gorelikov's instincts vibrated like a tuning fork. Blokhin was a senior Spetsnaz sergeant in a cheap civilian suit, physically powerful, immensely experienced, outwardly calm and still. Impossible to control, ready to slaughter anything that moved. Blokhin said nothing, hardly moved. There was an air of controlled expectation in those downcast eyes, as if he were waiting for a bell to ring to murder everyone in the room. His burned forehead was striated where the flesh had melted and run like candle wax. With obvious irony, Gorelikov wryly explained that the sergeant had been seconded to work with the major. But to call Blokhin Shlikov's aide would be like calling a chainsaw a pair of pinking shears. Gorelikov saw Blokhin raise his eyes to stare at Dominika and watched how his future protege handled the furine challenge. She stared unblinkingly at him, hands relaxed, then turned away dismissively to look at Gorelikov to continue. Satisfactory, thought Anton. He could not know that Dominika had seen black bat wings of elemental evil unfolded behind the ogre, and stretched wide like a seabird dries its wings in the sun. Dominika had shuddered slightly, and Blokhin saw it. Only one other human, Zhuganov, her former psychotic supervisor, had black wings like this instead of colors. Loken blinked slowly at Dominica as if wondering how her liver would taste roasted on a stick over a campfire.
"Perhaps Colonel Igorova would give us a précis of her new case," said Gorelikov. His tourmaline cabochon cufflinks peeked out of his sleeves.
"Are these gentlemen cleared for the details?" she asked. Shlikov looked up at her with a sneer.
"Yes, Colonel, we're familiar with all aspects of the case with Academician Re, which is an infernal nuisance and must be terminated immediately.
Perhaps the Major can explain how the GRU is familiar with an SVR case," said Dominica. Gorelikov smiled inwardly. Igorova outranked this Kvastun, this swank pot bully, and she wasn't going to back down.
"We are familiar with every aspect of your so-called case, because it intersects and interferes with a case of much greater importance that the GRU is running," said Shlikov.
Dominica smiled. Gorelikov interposed like a judge separating two attorneys.
"The deconfliction of intelligence operations is always critical," he said. "I am all eagerness to hear about your cases, both of them."
"Sadly, Igorova is not cleared for it," said Shlikov. Gorelikov raised a hand.
"Now, Major," he said, "I believe the President gave instructions that both efforts should be coordinated. Please brief Colonel Igorova."
Shlikov heard the edge in Gorelikov's voice and complied.
"The GRU has been running a sensitive asset for nearly 12 years. The source is encrypted magnet, an American source with broad access to technology and policy."
Shlikov sat with his arms across his chest.
"That is quite impressive, Major," said Dominica. "I presume since the GRU is handling the case, the asset was a volunteer?"
Gorelikov again stifled a smile. Igorova was pulling Shlikov's tail with a backhanded comment made on purpose. Military dolts in the GRU would be incapable of recruiting such an asset from scratch. They'd stumbled on a volunteer.
"I am not at liberty to describe the source in any more detail," said Shlikov, red-faced.
"And I am still not clear," said Dominica, "how my new source, Academician Re, interferes with your source, Magnet. Can you clarify that?"
"I should have thought it would be obvious even to an SVR officer," said Shlikov. "Magnet has provided a certain technology that the GRU has shared with the North Koreans to assist their nuclear weapons program."
Dominica smiled. "So let's summarize. Magnet has passed railgun technology to the GRU, which in turn has passed it to the North Korean Intelligence Service, the RGB, which has in turn provided the data to be used in nuclear trigger design at the Yongbyon Scientific Research Center."
Shlikov looked back at Dominica without expression.
"Why would the GRU, under any circumstances, wish to accelerate the development of a North Korean nuclear device?" asked Dominica.
"Bravo," thought Gorelikov. "Igorova arrives at the correct issue in 5 minutes."
"That is not an intelligence matter," snapped Shlikov. "That is a policy consideration far outside your purview."
Gorelikov, from the end of the table, looked at Dominica with a blank expression that meant drop it.
"And what does the SVR director think?" said Dominica.
"No answer. The current SVR director is a non-entity."
"Is it the President's edict that Academician Re be terminated?"
"I see no conflict between the two cases.
Magnet is only providing the technology. Professor Re is a penetration of the North Korean nuclear program.
Cannot both cases be run concurrently and in close coordination?"
Gorelikov noted how Igorova kept her temper while Shlikov fumed.
"When an asset of immense potential value is threatened by another asset of lesser value, priorities must be set. There is no question that Igorova's case must be terminated. The SVR must withdraw from the operational field," said Shlikov.
"I believe we can discuss the compatibility of these cases at a later date," said Gorelikov.
"But what the Major says is true. Magnet is of immense importance, now and in the future.
But this brings us to another subject, the ultimate reason for this meeting, the secure handling of Magnet.
The President has ordered the SVR to assist the GRU in establishing an enhanced handling protocol for this asset." Shlikov bristled in his chair.
The GRU is more than capable of handling its assets securely, he snapped.
You may wish to express your opposition to the President's wishes in person, said Gorelikov softly, using the time-honored Kremlin threat. Shlikov looked down at his folder, retreating, knowing the conversation was probably being recorded. No one has the experience and acumen that the SVR can bring to a foreign operation, said Gorelikov, ticking points off on his fingers. Magnet will be more safely handled in the United States by an illegals officer. SVR administers Line S, the illegals directorate. Colonel Igorova has handled illegals before. Besides, he continued as if any of it made a difference, the President expressly wishes that Colonel Igorova be involved in the handling and communications plan for Magnet, said Gorelikov.
I did not agree to this, said Shlikov.
The President did not solicit your approval, said Gorelikov impatiently. Magnet has been handled adequately for a decade, with tradecraft commensurate with the asset's position.
Gorelikov was devilishly clever not to use the masculine or feminine pronoun.
Be patient. Someone will make a slip sooner or later, Dominika thought. But the internal handling protocol must now be strengthened, said Gorelikov. With the prospect of Magnet's improved access, handling can no longer be left to inside GRU officers. A top illegals officer in New York City, encrypted Susan, will handle Magnet internally from now on, and Igorova will travel to the United States to meet her and pass dedicated communications equipment.
Well, we at least know Susan is a she.
New York. It would be Dominica's first trip to America. What none of them at the table knew was that for at least 10 years, Magnet was also being met once a year outside the United States by Gorelikov himself. Gorelikov considered Magnet his case, despite Shlikov's pettifogging, and now, as Magnet's access was going to mushroom, he wanted to jettison clunky GRU handling and institute more secure handling in the United States.
The SVR will try to usurp the case, said Shlikov unhappily. The general staff will not stand for any attempt to purloin the intelligence.
You mean steal your credit, said Gorelikov dryly. Do not worry, the case will remain with the GRU. Colonel Igorova need not even know Magnet's true name when she passes the equipment to Susan.
Wrong answer, Anton, thought Dominika. I need to know where our friend Magnet lives and breathes. There will be time.
That's most reassuring, said Shlikov. But I want Blokin to accompany the Colonel to New York to protect our operational equities.
For a million reasons, no way, thought Dominika. I'll be meeting Nate and Braddock in New York.
Now I'm afraid I must object, said Dominika. Two officers cannot make a clandestine meeting in tandem. Though I'm sure Sergeant Blokin's skills in the field are many, I suspect surveillance detection is not one of them.
Blokin's strange bass voice surprised everyone. I'll show you my field skills whenever you like, he said.
His vacant look was more alarming than had he been growling. The black wings folded back on each other. Shlikov and Blokin pushed back from the table, gathered their folders, and left the conference room. The metronome click of their heels in the hallway faded until they turned a corner in the gorgeous hallway. Gorelikov heaved a deep sigh. Dealing with that Presmikayushishya, that reptile, is always tiresome, said Gorelikov. His grandfather was a hero in the Great Patriotic War until Stalin shot him in 1949. His father was an army marshal in the 70s, and young Valery has done well in the GRU. He is ambitious, privileged, and unethical, so watch your back with him.
And Magnet? Asked Dominika casually.
An immensely productive case with unimaginable promise, said Gorelikov, who was not ready to reveal the agent's identity to Igorova on the eve of her trip to New York. The asset has risen through the bureaucracy and is now poised on the U.S. national policy stage. If things develop the right way, the source will be handled by the illegals officer in New York and directed from the Kremlin as a director's case, despite our ill-mannered Shlikov's wishes.
Okay for now. No more questions about the mole. You'll have the name for Benford in a month.
And would it be overstepping my bounds to ask why in heaven we are helping the North Korean nuclear program? Said Dominica.
Because I want to disorient the Chinese and flatter that little dumpling in Pyongyang, said President Vladimir Putin, entering the conference room from a side door. The usual blue suit, white shirt, aquamarine tie, and darting blue eyes complemented the well-known phlegmatic expression somewhere between a grin and a leer. Putin came around the table with his characteristic rolling sailor's gait, which an obsequious Kremlin biographer had described as a KGB-taught fighter's stride, but Dominica suspected was just a short man's waddle. Without speaking, he sat opposite her and rested his hands on the table. His blue aura, intelligence, guile, calculation, was like a kokoshnik on his head, the traditional conical Russian headdress, half tiara, half diadem.
I would like you to meet the illegals officer in New York, he said.
Dominica had no doubt he had heard the conversation with Shlikov 5 minutes before.
The clairvoyant leader, the all-knowing czar.
Yes, Mr. President.
I trust you to take the necessary precautions.
Of course, Mr. President, said Dominica.
Take Blokin with you as support, Putin said.
Gorelikov stirred.
Mr. President, he said.
A Spetsnaz trooper is not exactly what the operational situation.
Take him along nonetheless, said Putin.
Keep the major happy until he begins his other project.
Gorelikov kept quiet.
And when you return, said Putin to Dominica, I want to discuss new initiatives in the SVR with you. The recent favorable results of the Aktivnye Meropriatia, our active measures in the United States, tells me we should expand our capabilities in this area.
I will look forward to it, said Dominica.
Putin's face softened as his eyes settled for an instant on the tight buttons of her tailored blouse under her navy suit.
I'll kill Benford if he asks me to do what Melonhead is thinking right now, she thought.
Dominica was used to men staring at her figure and reveled in staring them down, but it was different with the leers of the president. They had a history of sorts. She shuddered as she remembered Putin's late-night visit to her room years ago during the weekend at the palace outside St. Petersburg. He wore red silk pajamas and walked in without knocking. Sitting upright in bed in her lacy nightgown, she had held the bedclothes up under her chin to cover herself, then remembered she had to captivate the czar, and lowered the sheet. She had dared to put her hand in his lap as he ran his fingers inside the full cups of her baby doll, to demonstrate her willingness, but her practiced sparrow ministrations had to her alarm no immediate effect on him. The president had silently departed soon after, but the encounter hung over them, a preordained coupling sometime in the future, whenever the czar would appear to claim his prize. And she would let him. She had to.
Shashlivogo puti, said the president. Bon voyage.
He got up, nodded at Gorelikov, and exited by a separate side door that was opened by one of a score of werewolf aides who were always lurking. The door clicked shut, and Gorelikov sighed. Directing Putin's one-man secretariat was a trial.
I've ordered a light lunch, he said. Will you join me?
They walked down the corridor to a small executive dining room and sat at a table. The waiter wheeled in a cart with a platter under a silver cover.
Selbodzhiboy, herring under vegetable salad, said Gorelikov, serving Dominica a plate.
I hope you like it.
It's very good, she said, thinking that the average young Russian probably never tasted such a delicacy.
Gorelikov chewed thoughtfully.
Too much mayonnaise, he said, wiping his mouth. I have much to tell you.
I will appreciate your guidance, said Dominica.
First, I must mention that the president applauds your service record.
He is following your career with interest. Unfortunately, with an erection, thought Dominica.
I predict he will promote you in the next trimester. The directorship of SVR will follow, in my view.
Gorelikov's blue halo held steady, suggesting that he was telling the truth.
The president also likes Major Shlikov, said Gorelikov. Perhaps he admires how naglie, how brazen he is.
Do we terminate Academician Rhee in favor of the magnet case? Said Dominica.
Gorelikov shrugged.
I agree that your case has merit, an invaluable look inside the Hermit Kingdom's nuclear program, but I predict the president will tire of pitting the North Koreans against Beijing and withdraw his support. We can decide later.
I'm still not clear how one case threatens the other, said Dominica. Both streams of intelligence will be handled in compartments.
Gorelikov observed how much ops sense this beauty had. He toyed with the notion of briefing her on Magnet, but decided it was too soon. He admired how she was not shy about pressing her point, even to a superior in the rarefied air of the Kremlin. He strongly suspected she would be suitable for what he had in mind.
Shlikov believes the fact that the North Koreans are receiving railgun technology incontrovertibly reveals that an American source exists. If Magnet continues to move up, the case will eclipse all others and must be protected.
Is Magnet that good? Said Dominica. Last question, don't press.
The asset has the potential to be the best source in the history of our intelligence efforts against the main enemy, said Gorelikov with a chuckle. If you excuse that old Soviet phrase, the main enemy, which, incidentally, is enjoying a resurgence in this building. You should keep that in mind.
I will, said Dominica.
Good. Now for politics, said Gorelikov. Beijing is agitating the region with those damn artificial islands in the South China Sea. They're defying Washington, they're annoying the president. Putin wants to distract the Chinese, insert himself between the Beijing Politburo and Pyongyang, and shake up the cozy relationship that's been unchallenged since the 50s.
But forgive me, I can see the merit in active measures to disrupt the relationship, but at the cost of letting them have the bomb? Asked Dominica.
Gorelikov laughed.
I know. I asked the same question, said Gorelikov.
This man is a right-thinking advisor, thought Dominica, not a lickspittle.
It just seems like quite a risk, said Dominica. My experience with the Iranian nuclear program taught me that research and development can stall, then accelerate unpredictably.
Gorelikov smiled at her. Our work is fraught with risk, he said. You yourself run risks every day, don't you?
The familiar douche of icy alarm ran up Dominica's spine, the ageless affliction of the clandestine agent who lives with the dangling dread of discovery every waking moment.
What's that supposed to mean?
An innocent comment? A coy hint that she somehow suspected? Nate would howl in distress and demand anew that she immediately defect.
Your experiences with the Iranians were risky. Your duel with the lamented Zhuganov was risky.
The spy swap in Estonia was exceptionally risky, said Gorelikov.
No, Dominica.
May I call you Dominica, and you will call me Anton?
You run risks with courage and resolve, which is why the president has his eye on you, and so do I.
A spiderweb trap or the start of a rare allegiance in a Kremlin where there are no allies?
I value your support, Anton.
Excellent. So we use Academician Ree for the time being to monitor those cabbage eaters and their infernal nuclear triggers, said Gorelikov. Meeting him in Vienna will be delicate.
You have no idea, thought Dominica.
I have a support asset assisting me locally, said Dominica.
The Petrescu woman? Said Gorelikov. She's quite impressive.
Jesus, this elegant haberdasher knows a lot.
Gorelikov pushed the platter toward her.
More salad?
There's another delicate task the president intends to assign to you. He's convinced the Chinese intelligence service, the MSS, is spying on us, a view I do not necessarily share. Since you are SVR Chief of Counterintelligence, President Putin wants you to handle official liaison relations with the Moscow representative of the MSS.
A lot to tell Benford right away. A shrack shot to Langley tomorrow night at the latest. After dinner with Ioana, just back from Vienna.
It appears I will be busy, said Dominica.
Welcome to the Siloviki, whispered Gorelikov, as he put more salad on her plate.
Selpodshuboy, herring under vegetable salad. Finely dice boneless herring fillets. Separately grate cooked carrots, potato,
peeled apple and hard-boiled egg whites, reserve yolks. Finely grate cooked beets, drain well, and whip with mayonnaise to make a velvety spread. Layer grated ingredients in a deep oval relish dish, pressing each layer firmly, starting with herring, potatoes, a thin coat of mayonnaise, carrots, apples, and egg whites, then mayonnaise, herring, potatoes, and carrots. Completely cover compressed salad with the beet spread on top and sides, like frosting a cake. Garnish with finely grated egg yolk and refrigerate. Serve with crusty country bread.
Chapter 6. Behave Like a Bull. The Uzbekistan restaurant on Neglinaya Ulitsa in Moscow's theater district was a Central Asian seraglio, lavishly decorated with framed mirrors, chandeliers, and overstuffed banquettes littered with kilim pillows. Dominika pushed through the brushed copper door into the restaurant, registering the aroma of baked lamb laced with cardamom, coriander, and fenugreek. She brushed past the maitre d' squeezed between opulent tables in the main room, and took the three steps up to the raised dining level. At the back of this private space under a purple and blue striped canopy sat Dominika's sparrow, Ioana Petrescu. She was sipping a glass of white wine and did not wave or otherwise acknowledge seeing Dominika approach. Ioana had lost the tan from her time in Greece, but was elegant in a pair of leather pants, and wore a red silk blouse with a bateau neck. There was the familiar, pulsing crimson halo around her head and shoulders, the aura of passion and lust and heart and soul. "I automatically thought I'd have to buy new lingerie for babysitting your nuclear scientist. But then I remembered he's not interested, so instead I bought a fur coat to keep me warm in Vienna," said Ioana in French, without a word of greeting. "It's coming out of your pay, Voryshka, you sneaky thief. Did you find the right apartment? It's going to be important to keep him safe. When he comes to you for dinner or when we have meetings, you have to make sure he arrives clean. Those maniacs watch their people closely, and the IAEA is like a small village. Everybody knows everybody else's business." Ioana nodded. "I found a house on the island, a riverside beach cottage on the other side of a little lake called Kaiserwasser, half a mile from the International Center, 5 minutes' walk from IAEA. He can walk to the house and back in 15 minutes if he has to. The houses are summer rentals. They're all empty now. The Danube feeds the lake and surrounding inlets. The neighborhood is very wooded, and the cottage is quiet and cozy. A shame the professor doesn't care for fun." Dominika laughed. Ioana hated the sparrow life as much as she had. She was smart and efficient, which is why Dominika drafted her to do the preliminary ops work in Vienna. "Have you considered that the professor is not interested in fun with you? With your backside spreading north and south, he may not be attracted." In truth, Ioana's buttocks were like sculpted marble from years of championship volleyball. "I have decided I like you less and less each year," Ioana said. "Forget about your zadnitsa, your fanny," said Dominika. "Did you install the recorder in the cottage?" Ioana nodded. "A long play wire recorder in the cupboard, two wireless pickups around the chairs and table. The machine is voice activated, so I don't have to turn it on. Not as good a job as a tech could do, but you can't see a thing." More to tell Benford, but it could wait until the next track shot. She was already up to the character limit for tonight's transmission. "We'll go back to Vienna after I return from New York. It will be time to talk to him again by then." "Buy me something expensive in New York," said Ioana. "You already bought yourself a mink," said Dominika. Ioana shook her head.
"A watch, the one that shows phases of the moon."
"You need a $10,000 Swiss watch, so you'll know how long to play the French flute with a recruitment target." "From someone who used to faire unterlut before breakfast, that's a bit rich," said Ioana. "A wristwatch is out," said Dominika. "Maybe a pair of shoes with round heels instead?" "Liking you less and less." "What are we eating?" said Dominika, looking at the time. She still had 2 hours.
"There's chicken with mushroom cream like Arsiu Lama de Pui in Romania," said Ioana. "Even beastly Uzbeks know our food is best."
"Slava Bogu. Thank God for Romanian food," said Dominika. ordering two plates, which arrived quickly. Tender pieces of chicken in a rich sauce supreme of cream and mushrooms fortified with egg yolks and sour cream, served with Russian mashed potatoes. The women looked at each other after the first bite, approving. They ate in silence. Ioana was content knowing that Colonel Igorova depended on her and was satisfied with her. This late dinner was proof of that. Dominika trusted her to rent the Vienna safe house. There would be other operations, maybe even the possibility of being made an officer in the service. Igorova would take care of her. On the sidewalk outside the restaurant, they kissed on both cheeks, and without a word of farewell, Ioana walked north on Neglinaya Ulitsa. Dominika watched her go, leather pants hissing like a snake, and thought how she would have preferred to be going with Ioana for a nightcap. But there was work to do, and Ioana had nothing to do with it, and could know nothing. She would be porajeni, amazed, if she knew. Carrying the heavy bag with her signaling equipment over her shoulder, Dominika started walking south on Neglinaya, feeling the ice water flow into her chest as she went operational. It was a transformation both mental and corporeal, the mark of a street operator partly learned, partly instinctive. Her pulse quickened, and she tamped down the adrenaline rush in her neck and shoulders. Dominika's vision became acute, crystal clear and focused on the middle distance. Her hearing, likewise, was tuned to the timbre of the street around her. She heard car engines, the hiss of tires on wet cobbles, and the shuffle of footsteps on the sidewalk. It was late. Moscow traffic, while never non-existent, would be light. She had to determine her status. She had to know she was surveillance-free. She had to get black. Walk south on Neglinaya, stair-step west, use the empty high-end walking streets to Leshnikov, luxury stores dark. Surveillance would shy away from this funnel, this choke point, so look for the squealing, leapfrogging units hurrying to get ahead. Negative. Turn north on Bolshaya Dmitrova, cross street for a snap look, parked car with side lights on, negative. Past Muzkalny Theater, its bas-relief columns illuminated, woman with shopping bag, second hit, she's hurrying home. Disregard and cut through Petrovskie Vorota, leafy walking path lined with empty weekend market stalls, no flanker silhouettes under the trees, get to the little parked car under the sooty overhang of the Rossiya Theater, no stakeout units, no finger smudges around the door locks, get in, pause, smell the car for the lingering reek of an entry team. Proceed. Check the trapped glove box. Tape still in place. Pull out in traffic. Ignore horns. Look for trailing units reacting, swerving to keep up. Keep windows down. Hear the street. Feel the street. North out of town. On Svirskaya. Change lanes. Watch for reaction. Keep speed slow. Lull coverage. No turn signal. Merge onto the M10. Gradually increase speed, traffic sluggish, articulated trucks belching smoke, headlights slotting behind. Negative. Sokol district coming up. Pay attention. Take split onto Volokolamskoye Shasse. Lighter traffic, goose it. Watch for reaction. Negative. Nearing timing point, black ribbon of Moski Canal. Check time. Svoboda overpass coming up. Reach into the oversized purse on the passenger seat. Feel for the button under the fabric, light rail overpass for number 6 tram coming up, check mirror, clear, now, 2-second low power burst, 1.5 watts, waking up the Schrack receiver buried 6 inches under the grassy rail embankment, under the catenary lines, yellow light inside the purse winking green, electronic handshake, message received, message to Nathaniel, secrets in the night, moles in our midst, ICBMs and warheads. Now the roar of the tunnel underpass. Check mirror. Drifting. Steer straight. Don't jackrabbit away. Looping ramp to the elevated E-105 ring road. Traffic faster now. Your 6 is still clear. Past sleeping towns Strogino and past Mayakinino and past Druzhba. The road in the dark. Mother Russia in shadow. Her countrymen snug in their homes, believing only what their blue-eyed czar told them to believe. Eating only what the Tsar fed them, hoping only for what the Tsar let them hope for, fatigue now from gripping the steering wheel for so long, watch for the exit, West on Rublevskoye, take it slow. Left, right, left. Natural reverses in the triangle formed by Rublevskoye, Yartsevskaya, and Molodogvarskaya. Look for swirling coverage, negative. Cross Rublevskoye and east on Kostanevskaya, her building. Number 9, dark windows, half covered by ivy, bulb burned out over the entrance, dim staircase. She'd have to finger the key into the lock of her apartment door. She rested her forehead against the steering wheel. Kostanevskaya at this early morning hour was completely lined with parked cars, both sides of the street. Cursing, Dominika had to cruise several blocks west before she found an empty spot near an all-night Almi pharmacy, its green neon sign coloring nearby trees and the scrawny grass verge in front, its front door reinforced with bars and opened remotely by the duty clerk. Trash paper swirled in the empty lot. Dominika locked her car door and started walking on the darkened sidewalk toward her building. The neighborhood was deathly silent. She clutched the oversized tote with the stiff bottom that was concealment for her Shrack unit, antenna wires and transmit buttons sewn into the leather, standby and receive LED lights concealed as interior compartment snaps. Once home, she would fit a thin lead into a port inside the bag to download the incoming message from CIA, intelligence requirements or personal meeting schedules, or occasionally the rare operational requirement. Since her recruitment 5 years ago, she had met her CIA handlers overseas, sparingly and cover permitting, to participate in a recruitment or in a false flag approach, or in a debriefing, all of them glorious, heady trips to meet her secret CIA colleagues, including Nate, with whom she was still furious but missed terribly. What message awaited her? Last week's message had mentioned Istanbul, and Dominika anticipated new instructions. She thought about Nate as she walked. Boje, God. Loving him was against all the rules of tradecraft, but Dominika wouldn't stop, and Nate couldn't stop. She had told them she was committed, that she was not spying against Russia but for Russia, to flush out the Kremlin sewage farm and send them all back to their filthy little beginnings. So if she was CIA's irreplaceable agent valued beyond all measure, and she wanted to love Nate, they should shut up. Pravilno? Right? She dreamed of kissing Nate again, in a taxi or an elevator, or pressed hard against a hotel room door, his hands on her and... Dominika saw movement under the trees, in front of the pharmacy, silhouettes coming up off the grass, 1, 2, 3, like demons emerging from the underground. They began moving through the trees parallel to the sidewalk, heads turned toward her. Dominika's first thought was that somehow the Internal Security Service, the FSB, the spy catchers had discovered her, knew she was spying for CIA, and had intercepted tonight's burst transmission to the Americans on Volokomskoye Shasse. Impossible. How? A mole in Washington? A breach of security in Moscow Station? A cracked cipher? However they did it, all the evidence they needed to bury her was sewn into the oversized purse hanging over her shoulder. Could she resist, somehow get away? How many of them would swarm out of the night and overwhelm her? She'd soon find out. Beside her hands and feet, the only weapon in her purse was a keyring. Keeping an eye on the silhouettes, Dominika laced keys between three fingers of her right hand. Dominika had been trained and kept up a weekly sparring session in Sistema Rukopashnogoboya, the hand-to-hand combat system used by Spetsnaz, the ferocious Russian special forces. Sistema was an amalgam of classic martial arts, ballistic hand strikes, management of an attacker's momentum, and devastating strikes against the six core body levers. She had killed, with desperate luck, trained assassins in hand-to-hand encounters. But she knew that in combat, one slip, one missed block, or sustaining a crippling strike would be the end. The three silhouettes stepped into the light, and Dominika breathed a sigh of relief. Gopniki. Not an FSB arrest team. A gopnik was a male street tough, head-shaved, gap-toothed, perpetually slurry-eyed and red-faced on cans of Jaguar alcoholic energy drink. Invariably dressed in Adidas track suits, pointed toe leather, tapochki, and gondonka flat caps, They infested suburban Moscow street corners, bus stops, and city parks, sleeping, drinking, puking, pissing, and mugging passers-by. Their byword was bichit, to behave like a bull. They would want her purse and would bludgeon her to death to get it,